Welcome to a show about things you can see without going far, and a lot of them are free. If you thought there was nothing in the old heartland, you ought to hit the black op with these fools in a van. Look out, they're driving hard, checking out art in their own backyard. Randy does the steering so he won't hurl. Mike got the map, such a man of the world. That's Don with the camera, kinda heavy on his shoulder. And that giant ball of tape, it's a world record holder. Look out, they're driving hard, checking out art in their own backyard. Look out, they're driving hard, checking out the world in their own backyard.
And good morning to you. Welcome to the Walt Bodine Show. Thursday morning, it is, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I always get insecure as soon as I say something like that. Yeah. Okay, so it is Thursday morning. And Gina.
Hi, Walt.
Who are we about to meet up with and why?
Well, as the music might have indicated to fans of Kansas City Public Television, we are here with one of our guests anyway is Mike Murphy, the co-host of Kansas City Public Television's Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations. Mike helped curate an art exhibit, Rare Visions Detour Art, that is currently on display at the Belger Art Center. Could you tell us about that show and who all's involved in it, Mike?
You bet. Sure. Well, it's a show of work that's been collected up over the years surrounding the television show we've done since 1995 on KCPT. That's the Rare Vision side of it. The Detour Art side of it comes from a good friend of ours, Kelly Ludwig, and a lot of her collection.
Yeah.
And she's been put into a lot of her stuff is in the show down there. In fact, the majority of work actually belongs to her. And then we gathered up work from all kinds of other artists around town, other places in the Midwest, other folks, the Grassroots Art Center out in Lucas, Kansas. Some of these places will be familiar to your listeners. And we put together a kind of a celebration of all that kind of outsider art, intuitive art, self-taught art. It goes by a lot of different names, but it's really a celebration of creativity, I think. And so the Belger Gallery was Mo Dickens down there, had this brilliant idea, so I have to blame it on Mo.
Yeah. And we are here with Mo as well. He's the gallery assistant at the Belger Art Center. Good morning, Mo.
Good morning, and the way I got the idea for the show was, of course, watching Mike's television show, and I've always loved folk art for many, many years. So then when I found out we had this resource here in Kansas City, the Rare Visions Roadside Revelation show, I thought, boy, if we ever want to do a show about folk art, we got to get these guys involved.
Mm-hmm. And, Mo, how has the reception been so far?
The reception has been through the roof. We kind of gauge our crowds by how much popcorn people eat, because we have a big popcorn popper. And normally we pop up a big case of popcorn for opening night. And what we don't eat, the employees at Belger Cartage Service in the same building where we are, they get to eat the popcorn for the rest of the week. We were out of popcorn by 7 p.m. opening night. It was a crowd like we'd never seen down there.
Really?
There was a lot of people from Lucas, Kansas in the building. They only have 450 people in Lucas, and so we had over 1,000 in the building that night. So
the town was empty.
Yeah.
What do you think accounts for the popularity of the show? I mean, what do you think it is about this art that goes by a lot of names, as we've mentioned, folk art?
The thing about folk art is it's so accessible and it's not intimidating. Mike and I kicked around some ideas and we almost called the show, "You Could Have Done This." Everybody has a creative spark in them. Everybody needs an outlet, and it doesn't always come out through the visual arts, but, you know, performing or singing. And these particular people, a lot of them are rural people, and they feel this compelling need to get out in their yard or go out in their barn and make things. And they use bottle caps and sticks and hot water heaters. We got the most beautiful angel made out of a hot water heater you'll ever see. At the show that's
an angel made out of hot water.
Yes, Walton, it's a beauty.
You want to think that over?
Really?
Mike, I wonder if you could help us out in saying what distinguishes outsider art from insider art?
Well, there's a lot of disagreement in the art community regarding strict definitions of this work.
Really?
Yeah, it's been called lots of things over the years, outsider art, art brut, contemporary folk or self-taught art, visionary. And all kinds of things. I just like to think of it as you know, like Mo said, at one point we almost called it the Why Don't You Show, because so many people say, well, I could make that, and I think anybody can make it. And but we always, well, I always, when I hear that, I always want to say, well, then why don't you?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you know, that the strict definitions are really aren't so important to me. It's just that it's the creativity that's up there. It's a celebration. I think anybody can reach out and touch it. Everybody knows somebody or some site they've seen, some place they grew up where they've seen this kind of work, and so it's just,
yeah,
it's just a great, great celebration.
How long have you been doing Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations?
We did the first show in 1995, and I need to give credit to Randy Mason and Don Mayberger, Don the camera guy, and neither one of whom are here today. We did just one show. It was going to be a one-time deal on the state of Kansas. And it was, I have to be honest, it was an excuse for us to get out of the office for 4 or 5 days and get on the road. And we were in between other projects. And
yeah.
The New York Times had called Kansas I think they'd rated it 50 out of 50 for vacationing. And we knew that wasn't true.
Yeah.
And and we had done a piece on an old art show we used to do called Marquee. And there was some of the listeners may know there was a site at 103rd and Knoll for years and years, a really lovely site. And we'd done a story on that man, and we got a bunch of calls. And the next thing I know, it was just an excuse to head out with really very little plan. And just 4 days out of the office, I don't know how they let us do that. I'm sure they're still regretting that decision, but... But the show did so well, that first show, that we've been making them ever since.
And what's the farthest that you've ever roamed from the mother city?
Well, let's see. We've been in Maine. We've been in Florida. I'm not sure which of those is farthest, but
you should take a tape measure next.
Yeah,
time.
I'm geographically challenged, obviously.
World's largest tape measure.
Yeah, the world's largest tape measure would come
like
in very
you
handy.
Toward the east.
We just did a tour on the West Coast too.
Did you?
Yeah, the last batch of shows. We finally got to Nevada. We hadn't been there, and so that was kind of exciting for us. We've really just missed Hawaii and Alaska at this point, and we missed Delaware. We didn't find anything there, and I think that's it. There may be one more I'm forgetting that we haven't been in, but we've pretty much been in.
How would you like to live in a state where people say, we went to Delaware and there was nothing there?
Oh, yeah. No, there's plenty to see, but we just, for some reason, didn't find an artist when we were passing through. So
yeah.
Delaware's actually a lovely place.
And, yeah.
I've been to the shore out there a number of times, always enjoyed it.
Well, that you're bailing out now.
Yeah, I know. In case there's any people from Delaware, don't call in, please.
No.
Have you noticed trends in different regions as far as the folk art goes, or is it, you know, each individual is operating?
You can find interesting stuff anywhere, for starters. So, and there are always things that we've missed, which is what kills me the most. But in terms of trends, I don't know. The South is there's an awful lot of religious iconography out of the South.
There's so much. We actually set up a hell room down at the Belger. I think we have 29 different images of the devil.
Really?
One of them is fishing. He's got a fishing pole with money and sex and drugs and gambling on it. And
fishing for souls.
Yeah, a guy walked in the Belger Saturday, and he actually had a T-shirt that had that image on the T-shirt.
Really?
First time that had ever happened to us. A piece of art on our walls had been transferred to a T-shirt and is being sold now. Mike told us that his premise for the show, the Rare Visions TV show, was to get in the van and stop everywhere his dad would not stop when he was a kid.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
All the places your dad wouldn't stop the car going, you know, I would. Yeah.
Including the restroom?
Oh, yeah, including the restroom. Well, we would drive these trips across Kansas when I was a kid, and I'll never forget them, and I would see these great signs for the Garden of Eden, and it was just, the Garden of Eden, who wouldn't want to stop and see the Garden of Eden? But we would never stop because we had to be in Colorado to ski. So
let's talk about the Garden of Eden for a moment, and then I want to get to an artist who's on display in this show. You visited him, Mike, or you visited his widow, in fact. And Mo, it seems that you have a personal relationship with that artist, so I want to get to that in a minute. But let's talk about the Garden of Eden first, since you've brought it up.
It's out in Lucas, Kansas, which I'm convinced is the center of the universe for this type of artwork. There's some really great stuff out there. The Grassroots Art Center is there. And S.P. Dinsmore built this place. It was a mix of populist politics and Bible stories. And he built it to attract people off the train to stop and come and take a look. And that was the way populists got their stories across, as they entertained folks. And it's... It's just a great place, and it was a number of people bought it years ago and have been working on restoring it and saving it. He built all kinds of wonderful sculptures there out of concrete, and it was kind of space age for its day, and it was all lit up. And when the train would pull in on the horizon, I'm told, you could see it all at night, all bright, and it would make a water stop, and people would get off, and they would wander up and see it. And there's just it just seems like that area has attracted some amazing artwork. We'll probably get to Erica Nelson is out there, and she lives in Lucas and has the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things. And that in itself is a mouthful. No, I can't. Mo can do it. I know.
Well, actually, beyond that, she actually has the world's smallest version of the world's largest collection of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things, which she drove all the way. It doesn't go beyond that as far as I know.
Yeah.
But she lives in the property right next door to the Garden of Eden.
Really?
So for such a small town, they have a lot of interesting characters out there in Lucas, Kansas.
Yeah. Do you think it's something in the water?
I do.
I didn't see a lot of water when I was out there. But they do have the world's largest hand-dug well over there in Kansas.
Yep. Hand-dug well.
Yeah.
Down in Greensburg. I don't know how it survived the tornado, but I'm sure they're working on that now.
And if anybody's going to stop in Lucas on the way out here, there are some of the world's smallest versions of the world's largest things still there. Erica left all the ones from Kansas, like the world's largest prairie dog and the world's largest ball of twine, in Lucas. So in case anybody dropped in while the rest of the stuff was here at the
Ball of Twine. I've been hearing about that since I was a boy.
It still exists. In fact, there's two of them now.
Yeah, out in Cocker City, Kansas, there's a big ball of sisal twine, and there's one in Darwin, Minnesota, and just locally, there's one in Weston, as it turns out, a big ball of string that was certified in 1974 by Guinness Book of World Records, which was, I guess, lost in a warehouse for a long time up there.
How do you lose that big of a ball of string?
I'm not sure, because I've seen it, and it really is big. There's no way that you could... But apparently the last time it was out in public was for the bicentennial, and it's still sitting on its bicentennial float up there. It's at the new brewery up there, so... It's a pretty impressive sight.
On Mike's show, they actually have the world's largest ball of videotape, which came into play one time. He was down in Florida, and he was trying to interview an artist who was not very ready to talk that day.
Yeah.
And then somehow the guy figured out that Mike was the guy who owns the world's largest ball of videotape, and that really loosened his tongue up, and he gave him a great interview. So it was good to carry that around. It's becoming more famous than Mike, I think.
Yeah. I do get asked that question, where's the big ball, more than I get asked who you are. So.
If you're just tuning in and wondering, in fact, who this is, this is the Walt Bodine Show on KCUR, and we are visiting with Mike Murphy, co-host of Kansas City Public Television's Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations, as well as Mo Dickens from the Belger Arts Center, where Rare Visions Detour Art is currently on view. And Mo, there's someone who has been portrayed, whose art has been portrayed anyway, on Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations, and you have a personal relationship with him.
Yeah, there's a... Back where I came from in eastern North Carolina, right along the Roanoke River, there was a guy named Q.J. Stevenson, and he built what he called the Earth Museum. It was a concrete structure, and into the concrete, while it was wet, he pushed leaves and shells and Indian head arrowheads. And it was quite a thing, and it really stuck out. You know, it was a small town, mill town, and I was pretty much told, yeah, that's QJ, and never introduced to him. Nobody in my family ever went over there. And then in my 20s, I went to a folk art show with a woman named Lydia Lunch took me to a folk art show to see Howard Finster, who at that time was doing album covers for the Talking Heads and REM. And I thought, well, maybe this stuff is cooler than I ever realized. So I went over to QJ's house, and by that time, he was being collected by the Smithsonian American Art Museum in Washington, D.C., and other places. So I really hit it off with QJ, and my wife was teaching art at Duke University, and she loved QJ, and they had a lot of good conversations about art. He was a retired man when he got into it. And so I was thrilled when Mike and Kelly, they curated the show, but they put one of QJ's pieces in from Kelly's collection. I thought, how weird is this? You know, 20 years ago when we were, QJ and I were back in eastern North Carolina, neither of us ever thought we'd end up in a big art gallery in Kansas City, Missouri one day. So I posted something about that on Kelly's blog, the detourart.com blog.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, QJ died in 97, and so when Mike's TV crew showed up, the widow, Eloise Stevenson, actually gave them a tour of the place, and she died the weekend we opened the show. So that was a very strange coincidence. And so, you know, we posted a little story about that on Kelly's blog, and some of the grandkids back in North Carolina found it, and they contacted me, and they're like, what's this about Grandma being on a TV show in Kansas City?
They had never known.
No, so I ordered copies from KCPT's website and sent them copies. So imagine, you know, what that means to the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I told Mike, I said, you think you're having fun out here on the show, but you're documenting a lot of really important sites. It's not just the work, but they go and they meet the artist and they go to the environment that the artist works in, and they're really documenting some important things for future art historians.
And things that maybe these people haven't had their work validated in that way before.
Yeah, and we really have. We've saved every piece of footage that we've shot in the hopes that someday it'll end up in a museum or it'll be useful to art historians in some way, because so many of these sites end up disappearing after the people die. And sometimes they're considered eyesores in their own neighborhoods, and, you know, people are, not everybody likes the stuff, so for whatever reason, it just can't maintain it, whatever. They tend to go away after the original builder or the original artist dies. And so in many cases, a lot of these folks have gone on. They tend to be older people when we run on them in the first place. So,
how do people respond when you show up typically? I mean, are they surprised that a TV crew wants to film them, or...?
Sometimes they really are. We had a great chainsaw carver in Iowa who was just like, well, you're interrupting my Gilligan's Island hour. So could you make it quick? But I think that mostly they're happy that someone's taken an interest in their work, and usually they'd love to share the stories behind it. And
artists are a quirky lot. I mean, you can't just go around and expect that the next artist is going to have his arms open to you and saying, yes, take me to television.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. We've really never had a problem with any of them. They've all been happy to have us coming. And
you've never been thrown out?
I've never been thrown out yet. I suppose that could happen. We're about to go on the road again to make new shows here in April and May. So
now that Walt's mentioned it, it'll probably happen.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to call in and let you know. But fortunately, nobody's ever tossed us. Well, that's not really true. We did meet a guy in Grand Haven, Michigan once who we just talked to about coming, and when we showed up, he answered the door in his underwear and scared the heck out of Don, chased him right off the porch, and acted like he didn't want us anywhere near it. And after we talked to him for a few minutes, he was, oh, okay, well, all right, I guess I could put some pants on and talk to you. And then he went,
it is a TV show.
Where's that other guy I scared off? I need to apologize to him. So I suppose we've had an occasional thing like that, but it's been pretty rare. Most of these folks are pretty happy to share their story. They're generally driven to do this because they've got something they want to say.
Mm-hmm. So, such as, what are some of the things that the artists that you've included in the show have wanted to say in your mind?
Well, you know, let's think about Jesse Howard, who was a man from Fulton, Missouri here, and the Kansas City Art Institute has a large collection of his work and loaned a couple of pieces for the show, which I'm thankful to them for. He was a sign painter, and he had all kinds of things to say, some of them angry, some of them contentious, some of them Bible verses, you know, some of them about his own family and his children, and... he painted, I think they kind of referred to his house as Sorehead Hill down there at one point. And just on the outskirts of Fulton, Missouri. And he had passed on by the time we got there, but we saw the environment before it was torn down, or it was just at the last legs of its life. And it's what's funny to me is the town spent a lifetime, you know, basically trying to run the guy out, and then they named the street after him after he died. So it's Sign Painter Lane now, or Sign Painter Road, I forget. Sign Painter Hill, something like that.
Yeah.
To what extent do you think that this is all about the art that you're looking at, just the objects, and to what extent is it about the stories of the people and the places that you're visiting? I mean, in your case, I'd love to hear that, and I'd love to hear Mo's take on this as well.
Well, for me, it's always about the people. In the end, that's what's interesting. I love to look at the work, but the work doesn't mean anything without the context of the people and what they were trying to say and what they were, you know, what drove them. oftentimes, you know, folks come to this in their retirement and they've worked all their life hard. They sit around retired for a few days and they go, okay, well, I can't stand that anymore. And I've got something to say. So for me, it's all about the context. It's all about the people. And I started collecting the work along the way because I wanted something to remember the people by. It's not a, you know, collect, sell, you know, traditional art market kind of thing for me. It's just my collection is all personal stuff that I wanted to have nice memories or something to remember the artist by that we met.
Your version of a snapshot.
Exactly. And I look at stuff's all over my house, and I'll look it up at a piece sometimes, and I have a very fond memory of, L.V. Hall down in Mississippi, who was polka-dotting shoes in her yard. And I've got plates.
Doing what?
That she was polka-dotting shoes when we first met her.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't think it meant anything for her except that she thought she had a thing about people's and they're throwing away shoes, and she went dumpster diving for shoes all the time. And then she got them, she painted polka dots on them, and she stuck them on sticks in her yard. And pretty soon that polka dot theme was on everything in her house, including in the bathroom. I went into use at one point.
Every square inch.
Every square inch is polka dotted. And I stopped back by there a few years ago, and she was just so happy to see me again. And I picked she was now polka dotting plates and all kinds of things she was saving out of the trash, other people's throwaways, she's giving new life to.
With polka dots.
What about her car? Is it polka dotted?
You know, I don't think she was driving. It's a very small town, and
I
didn't see a car.
You could walk anywhere.
I don't think anything was safe around her, though. She was pretty much wild with that paintbrush. And she just was as friendly as she could be. She remembered us when we pulled in and come on in. Oh, I've got something I want to show you. I'm doing something new.
It seems like giving new life to the things other people have thrown away is a major preoccupation of a lot of these artists. I mean, it's a common thread.
It's a very common thread. I think it's my own personal theory, so you can give it as much weight as you want, but I think a lot of times it's just people work in the materials they have close at hand. There's a concrete park in Wisconsin, Fred Smith's park, I think. I mean, maybe drawing a name blank on the name, but anyway, he'd owned a bar, and he had a whole ditch full of broken bottles, and pretty soon he's making concrete sculptures with broken glass. And I think it's oftentimes about the materials at hand and what, you know, people will look around, I've got something to say, and I've got a lot of rocks, or I've got a lot of glass,
seashells,
whatever, and the next thing you know, they're working away.
When visitors come into Belger, I tell them, you're not going to see a lot of trips to the Utrecht Art Supply store represented in this show. I love Utrecht Art Supply. My wife teaches at the Art Institute. We go there all the time. But these guys mostly lived in rural areas. They didn't have any kind of art training. That's one criteria we set up for putting them in the show.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't use normal supplies, like, you know, Walt reacted to the angel made out of a hot water heater. There's a church that's carved out of a rock. When I saw it, I figured it must have been a ceramic piece model. But this lady,
Inez Marshall,
another Kansan, she was in an accident and she was laid up in bed for years. And one day she asked her dad to bring a rock in that she could see through the window. And she started carving. And she carved dozens of pieces, beautiful pieces. And to look at them, you never guess it was once a rock in somebody's yard.
Mo, what about you on this question of, is it about the art itself or what is the art without the stories of the people?
You know what? It's not just the folk art. I get that with every exhibit we do.
Yeah.
You know, when we did a Jasper John show a couple of years ago, I studied so much on Jasper John's, and I loved his life story. He grew up dirt poor, never knew he was going to be a famous artist in New York when he grew up in South Carolina. And I love telling the story. And I think my visitors, probably 95% of them, love hearing the story. There's a few people that just want to look at the art and want me to stay in the background, but often if I start talking to them and, you know, give them a little background on these things, they ask me to, you know, to walk along with them, and I love doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Whoa, there comes the music that tells us we're at the halfway mark. And that means that in the next half of the show, we are inviting people to call in and talk to these people who are with us today. And the question is, what is the phone number?
The phone number is 816-235-2888 if you want to call in. And just so you know, if you've been enjoying hearing about some of these pieces, we have links to both the Rare Vision site and to the Belger Art Center site on our website, kcur.org.
Thank you.
coming back, and Gina.
Hi, Walt.
If you were to say the phone number again, and I know you don't want to be repetitious, but if you were, what would you say?
The number is 816-235-2888. We'd love to hear about what kinds of folk art you've seen around or questions that you have for Mo and Mike about the people that they've met. Our
sure.
guests are Mo Dickens from the Belger Art Center, where they're showing an exhibit called Rare Visions Detour Art, and Mike Murphy, co-host of Kansas City Public Television's Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations. Now, there is a third person who's involved in the exhibit that we've been talking about, and she's not here, but maybe we could talk a little bit about her role in it. Her name is Kelly Ludwig, and actually she has out a book, and in the introduction she writes about how the experts have a lot of back and forth about folk art, but she doesn't know
yeah.
about that. She knows that she likes it.
She does love the work, and she's been a really great friend to Rare Visions over the years, to the television show. She's helped us quite a bit. She designed our first book, which is out there, and another one which is coming out she's working on very hard right now. And a lot of the work in this show down at the Belcher is actually from her private collection. She has one of the best collections I've ever seen, and is a tad more scholarly than I am about the collecting part. Her book is, just like you said, she's got the big interview up front, and she's got some amazing work in the show, and she's a very talented graphic artist to begin with herself. So,
and she couldn't be here today because she's actually doing my job. She's down at the Belger Art Center down in the Crossroads, giving a tour to Washburn University, a whole busload that came over from Washburn this morning. So they're lucky they got Kelly instead of me down there. Most of her collection is crammed into her house in Brookside. She lives near the Brookside shopping area in a bungalow. And the uh-huh. first time Mike took me over there, we had to squeeze through the front door. There's so much artwork in her house.
Yeah, I think she's got more than 400 pieces at last count. And I'm going to guess 80 or 90 of them are in this show. And they're really, and she really has a great collection.
So. It was featured in Spaces magazine this month and KC Studio magazine. Mm-hmm. So I've had several people come in that saw those articles and wanted to see what all she was collecting. And it's a wide-ranging collection, stuff from Florida to Seattle, Washington. I mean, she's been all over the country.
When you talk about her house, it sounds almost like collecting folk art is her folk art.
Yeah.
I think that'd be very fair.
Yeah.
Very fair
yeah.
statement.
Well, give us a call at 816-235-2888 if you want to talk about this, or email us at waltbodineshow@kcur.org. If you'd like to see images of some of the art we're talking about, I know that this is visual and you might want to see a photograph. Well, you can go to through the website, kcur.org. You can click on either the Roadside Revelations website, the Detour Art website, which is maintained by Kelly Ludwig, who we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
and the Belger Art Center site, which shows images from the show.
Yeah.
You were mentioning earlier the materials and the things that people find, and it reminded me of Jimmy Lee Suddeth, who's down at this show. And
paints with Coca-Cola.
Yeah, he paints with Coca-Cola and Georgia mud. So he mixes up dirt and pop, and apparently it's a great binder. And
a very noble use for soda.
Yeah, exactly. A good use for probably better than drinking it in
yeah.
some ways for you. So
let's hear from Diane in Midtown.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, I'm Diane from Midtown, and I wanted to say that I really love your show, and I plan to come down to the center. And I would also like to bring my youth. I developed a program for youth here in Kansas City, Missouri, and we look for found objects, and then we morph them into beautiful works of art.
Oh, that's good.
Wow. And person after my own heart.
Yeah, and I think your students would love the exhibit right now.
Okay.
Yeah. There have been there are some school groups going through, right, Mark?
I've had American Heritage girls, 10-year-olds, right up to college age, and we have a seniors group coming this afternoon. So all age groups have so far responded very positively to this show.
And, Mike, you've mentioned that a lot of people you visit for Roadside Revelations tend to be older people who often are doing this in their retirement years. What about very young people? Do you find that the folk art is something that they're inspired to do as well?
We find a few, but we don't find as many. It seems like it's something that comes to people a little later in their life. And,
yeah.
and like I said, sometimes after retirement, sometimes after a tragedy in their life or some kind of an illness. And I'm thinking of Kathy Ruth Neal
yeah,
at the moment,
who
was a woman who lived right here in Armour Hills, in the Armour Hills area, and carved the most beautiful things. And we have three pieces in the show from her. She had suffered a bout of breast cancer and had
she was
gone
a retired flight attendant.
A retired TWA flight attendant all her life.
Yeah.
And she goes to celebrate the successful treatment of the breast cancer and to hike the Appalachian Trail, and she starts whittling on sticks. And I guess she got addicted in some way because she never stopped it for the last 15 years of her life. And sadly, she just passed before this show opened.
But she came a long ways from whittling on sticks. The sculptures that she has in the show are just hilarious. There's one of a 3D movie of a lady coming out of the screen, and the audience is everybody in the audience has these shocked looks on their face, and they're wearing their 3D glasses. And I've not yet seen one person look at it that didn't bust out laughing. I mean, Kathy had a great sense of humor and a great way of carving the wood, and she came to it very late in life.
Yeah. And through maybe some personal tragedy that changed her life in some way. So.
And she, unfortunately, she passed away right before our exhibit opened.
Your show seems to have been timed with a couple of those.
I'm telling you. But, you know, again, it was a way for her family and friends to come down and celebrate that night. And we dedicated the show to her. And I tell you, they had smiles on their faces when they left because her spirit lives on through her art like so many of these guys.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Don in the Northeast on with us now.
Hi, Don.
Good morning, and I really love your show, and especially this show. I'm an academically trained artist, graduated from Kent City Art Institute, and I have worked with children, and I've been in love with so-called folk art or self-trained artist's work all my life. And I find a great similarity between the art of children and some of these folk artists. And I have really come to believe that all people have some innate creativity within them from their childhood, and a lot of people are thwarted or diverted from their creativity by all kinds of situations in their life and schooling and training, and I just find this kind of work really exciting because it exemplifies that creativity that I think exists within all humanity.
Okay, but Don, you know, we've got some background noise on your line, so I'm going to go ahead and let our guests respond to this, but thanks so much for that call.
Well, I think Don's absolutely right, and I do think there's a childlike quality to a lot, oftentimes to the work, which drawing outside the lines is the expression that comes to my mind, and I think of a guy like Ruben Sorensen, who's down there in the show, and who made me laugh so hard because he drew lots of sports figures and things, but there's never a head in any of the drawings. It's just, well, I can't draw heads, so they always be cut off at the neck at the top of the drawing. And I just
I've had a lot of art teachers bring their classes down, and they hate it when I tell that story. They look at their students and say, "You're not getting away with that in my class. You're going to draw a head whether you're good at it or not."
Yeah.
But you know, these guys, they're not in it for the show in a gallery or trying to make money. They're just doing what they do, and it comes straight out of their inner soul, and they're all different, and they're all wonderful.
And I do think kids really love coming. I mean, I do think they get something, so I highly recommend it for kids.
Let's hear from Martha in South Kansas City.
Martha.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Hi.
I also would want to add that they're humble. To me, they're humble people. You know, they're there's nothing grandiose about them. But there was one gentleman that stuck out with me. He was an older gentleman, can't remember his name, but he had artwork that was really, really high off the ground, and it was in metal, and it was like things that would turn with the wind. I mean, it was just absolutely wonderful.
Was this somebody you saw on the TV show?
Yes,
somebody?
Yes.
It might have been Vala Simpson from Eastern North Carolina, the big whirligigs.
Yep.
And they were metal. And I thought, how in the world, at his age, you know, could he get up there?
You're right. We thought the same thing, and I took one look at his forearms because these sculptures were huge, and he had Popeye forearms.
When my wife took her students from Duke over to Wallace's house, he was in his 80s by that time, and she said a couple of her girls' students said, "Man, that guy is sexy."
And you're right about them, the humble nature. I mean, most of these folks are just so pleased to tell you about what they were thinking and what they do, and the fact that anybody else is interested at all in it, I think, is oftentimes gravy.
I got two good examples of that. Mike covered a guy named La Savita out in Rhode Island. He did the shell art.
Oh,
and then Kelly wrote about it on her blog on detourart.com. The next thing she knows, she gets two boxes with two of his sculptures, and they're two of the more popular pieces in the show, but they came with a thank you note. He wasn't trying to sell them. He just appreciated being noticed by Mike and Kelly and getting some kind of positive feedback for what he was doing. Another great example is the day we opened. We didn't open until 10 o'clock, but at 9:30 there was a guy standing out front in overalls, and he wanted to come in, and he spent a good hour looking through the show, and then he wrote in our comment book, the very first comment was, "I was born and raised in Lucas, Kansas, and I never thought I'd see this in Kansas City."
Yeah, that, I get a lump in my throat.
There yeah, I've also noticed, you know, you mentioned his physical strength in a it seems like physical strength is kind of a running current, too. I remember the show where you saw the guy who has the Trail of Tears monument, and he also had built something that he said was for boxers to practice, and you guys tried it out. How'd that go for you?
Well, not too good for me, but he had his own outdoor health and spa and weight room and a hot tub and the whole business down there at that Trail of Tears. Larry Baggett was his name, and he's unfortunately passed, and that's actually a classic example of a site that's in jeopardy right now. Last I heard, it was for sale and grown up in weeds, and it was such a beautiful place down there on Interstate. It's at 44, runs across through southern Missouri, and just outside of Rolla. And we've crossed paths with other guys. The guy in Bishop's Castle out in Colorado, 17-story stone castle, and every rock moved by hand by this one guy over the last 40 years. And, you know, I wouldn't want it to take him in any kind of a wrestling match because he'd have whooped me for sure, and he had 30 good years on me at least. So
17 stories.
He said it was he couldn't go any higher because that was the actual crush limit on the rock. So
wow.
So that he'd been told by engineers, no blueprint, no plan. He just built it one rock at a time, and it had a fire breathing dragon on the top, and it's one of the more amazing sights. But people are always asking me, what's the most amazing thing you've come across? And to me, it's all amazing. I love it all. I don't have a favorite. I try not to, you know, I don't even. Every time I think, well, this is my favorite, then I think of somebody else. So it just doesn't work that way.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Walt Bodine Show on KCUR. With Walt, I'm Gina Kaufman, and we are talking to Mike Murphy of Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations, as well as Mo Dickens from the Belger Arts Center, where Rare Visions Detour Art is on view. You can click on information about the show, both the TV show and the art show, by going to our website, kcur.org. Let's talk now with Sarah in Fairway.
Yeah, hi, guys. This is really a very fascinating program. You made a passing reference early in this show about an installation that was at 103rd and Knoll.
Yes.
And I've always, you know, driven by that location and wondered what the heck that was. I know it's gone now. Can you tell us what it was and where it ended up?
Well, I can tell you where it ended up for sure. It's now in the Grassroots Arts Center in Lucas, Kansas. They ended up with a big chunk of that, and it's on display. They've got it in the bank vault, the old vault in their building out there, and it's you know, it's very nice to go see that still, some of that saved. But he was a man who just liked, you know, he thought things hanging in the trees were pretty. They moved, they blew in the wind, he would attach ribbons to them, and he'd like to watch them blow in the wind and shine and sparkle, and he thought it was beautiful. And he collected most of that stuff out of dumpsters or, you know, garage sales or the trash route, and he recycled a lot of it, and he built that whole wonderful kind of world there, and he would just sit in his front yard, and he would watch the squirrels run through it, and he loved the way it looked, and he was one of the kindest men I ever met. And
so what happened to him?
Well, he passed on.
He did.
And then the site, like so many of these.
Do you ever feel like an undertaker?
I do sometimes feel like an undertaker. I hear about these things, people passing, and and actually some of them have been really happy to have been on the show. About three or four times now I've seen people in their obituaries mention Rare, you know, it was a really great moment in their life when they were on Rare Visions. And
that's the ultimate compliment.
Yeah,
we got mentioned in Kathy Ruth Neal's obituary that she was looking forward to being in the show at the Belgian. It hits you how important these kind of shows are to these people.
Yeah.
Why do you think they're so important? I mean, we touched on it a little before, but
I think if you go through art school and you train to be an artist, you expect to be noticed. You expect your work to be appreciated. And a lot of these guys, they come to it later in life, and they're doing it just for themselves and not always getting a lot of good feedback from the family. And when other people notice, it really means – and that's not just in art. That's in everything you do. Everybody likes to be noticed and appreciated, and these guys especially. And back east, you have the American Folk Art Museum in New York City. It's on the same block as MoMA. You have the Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore. Out here in the Midwest, we don't have a lot. We have the great Kohler place up in Wisconsin. They have an incredible folk art collection, but not so much in the rest of the Midwest.
Except for Lucas.
Yeah, Lucas is doing their part for sure.
Let's hear from Van in Chicago.
Hi, Hello? Ben.
You're on Hi. The air.
Hi. Mike, I just first of all, let me say I love your show. I've got all the DVDs, including the latest one with Vegas.
Wow.
And I just
thank you.
I've actually met you and Randy and Kelly a couple times down at our Folk Fest in Atlanta.
Okay, sure.
And enjoyed that. But I just take issue with one thing that you said and one of the other callers mentioned about innate creativity. I really don't believe that we all have this innate creativity. And, you know, the idea that, well, I could do that. I mean, I've had people come to my house and say, you know, you buy this stuff? I could do that. And in a way, I do think, you know, why don't you? But I know that they can't. Not everyone has that. And I do think it kind of lessens or maybe cheapens the abilities of these folk artists who I think are tremendous. And I could never do that stuff. You know, it's the idea that wouldn't come to me and the ability to do it wouldn't come to me. So that's, you know, that's minor, but I really just don't think that everyone is that creative.
No, you make a good point. I think what we meant was everybody has something they can do. Not they couldn't create the things that you see. That's the great thing about this art. It comes from deep within these people's spirits and their ability to express themselves. So if anybody did do exactly what you see down there, they'd just be copying them. You know, what we meant was everybody has something inside of them that needs to come out. At least we hope so.
Does the idea that anyone could do it, does that cheapen something?
No way.
I don't think so. I do think Mo's right in that everybody can do something. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
You may find some place where you have some talent and something to say and a way to say it. So,
well, like a lot of these people, they were in their 60s and 70s before whatever talent they had came to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got JR in Midtown on the line.
Okay, JR.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Mike, I really appreciate the show. I was really excited about hearing about the exhibit so I can actually go see the stuff that was seen on TV. And the question I had for you, Mike, is have you guys ever done anything, and maybe I missed it, on House on the Rock in Wisconsin?
We did. We got close by there, and we did the house. We did the rock in the house, which was just down the road a little ways. We decided the house on the rock was a little, I don't know. It just seemed like it's one of those places everybody knows, and we were looking at the time for a little more out of the way. And just down the road, there's a place where a giant boulder crushed a house, and the guy continued to live in the house. He just worked around this boulder. I mean, this is a boulder the size of a semi or something. I mean, it was huge, and it literally just came right through the roof of his house. And so I don't know. There's something about that attracted us. And so no, we have not done the House on the Rock. We did the House in the Rock out in Utah, and that's actually not quite the name of it. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but that was a man who lived in a rock, and he'd carved out his entire home inside. It was quite beautiful.
How big of a rock?
It was the side of a mountain, so it was pretty big. The house was like, I don't know, 5,000 square feet or something. It was
pretty.
And he had passed. He'd been a miner. It had been a number of things over the years. I think it had been a house of ill repute for a while. It had been a bar. It had been all kinds of things after his passing. But some folks had it now, and they were trying to restore it back to the original.
That house on the rock up and that this caller just mentioned must be fantastic because I've had a lot of visitors to the Belger ask me if I've ever seen that.
I think it's one everyone knows.
I think Mike could do this show for another 30 years because people come in all the time. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this?
Yeah. And it's true. There are people we miss along the way that I oftentimes, and I'll just mention one really quickly because he's in the show at the Belger, a man named Dennis Clark, who works for the state up in Kansas in Topeka.
He's the star of the show.
Yeah, in some ways he's kind of the star of the show, and I'd never even met him. I just had seen a piece of his work at another show, and it intrigued me so much I knew I wanted him in the show. Contacted him, borrowed a couple of pieces from some other people, and met him on opening night, and he makes the most incredible little detailed maps of cities that he makes up in his head. And he, because he knows all this stuff, he, you know, he knows when populations grow and where schools start and parks start, and
they're all hand drawn and minuscule, right down to the little houses on the blocks.
Teeny tiny.
That's something that nobody, we cannot say you could have done this, because I don't know anybody else that could have done what Dennis Clark does.
Yeah, and to see him in there, he came opening night, and he's just, for 3 hours, he stood there and talked to people about his work, and he was so happy that people were interested, and it made me feel so good. So
we've got Janine from Topeka.
Yes. Yes, there was a piece in an education center in those underground vaults around Kansas City. Oh, this may have been 20 years ago, that an artist designed, but it was built by children and just people. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you've heard about that, and what I've always wondered what happened to it.
I can't say I've heard about that.
And, not ringing a bell with
but
me.
But now my radar will be up. I'll be looking for
it. It's like a 20-foot globe balanced on the back of a turtle.
Wow.
That was the size of a Volkswagen.
Well, it gets my attention, but I don't know anything about it, I'm sorry to say. I do know that another man from Topeka that I'd love to mention is Herman Divers, who did Pop Tops.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a set of clothing of his down there, but he made cars and motorcycles that completely out of the old Pop Tops off of pop cans.
Full scale. You could sit in this car made out of Pop Tops.
Yeah, and the wheels would spin and everything. The steering wheel would turn and nothing but Pop Tops.
There's 67 artists in the show and over 150 pieces. I wish we could talk about all of them. Mike and Kelly did a great job, and the crew down at Belger did a great job of installing it and pulling electricity from other parts of the building that we normally don't have to borrow because it's such a large show.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I would like to thank Al Sells and Allison Miller down there, and of course Dick Belger, who puts together a gallery that's just there for people to enjoy. It's not a sales gallery.
It's his gift to the community.
Yeah,
that's great.
And that's an amazing thing when you think about it.
It is.
It can't be cheap. It's got to be 6,000 square feet plus down there.
Maybe if some of the people who have been to that show want to call in, or anyone else, we've got just a few minutes left, but we could probably squeeze you in if you give it a try.
Yeah.
816-235-2888 or email waltbodineshow@kcur.org. And we'll talk now with Mark in Overland Park.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I was hoping you could help me with the definition. An outside artist, is it more of a style of outside art or folk art, or can you absolutely not have any formal art education to be considered a folk artist or an outside artist?
Mo, should I take that, or you want to take that? It's outsider to begin with, I'm sorry. And I think it does refer to people who are just sort of outside the mainstream of the art world. I'm looking for a definition here to see if I could find it. Outsider art, originally an English equivalent to art brut, the term was coined by Roger Cardinal in the late 60s, broadening the narrow scope of the art brut definition to include art that is produced by untrained artists who are unaware of its classic definition, such as those cut off from mainstream society. And I'm lifting that right off of the Detour Art book.
Well, actually, we do have one ringer in the show. We'll see if the visitors can figure out which one of these artists actually has a MFA.
Huh.
So one out of the 67 went through art training and was kind of pulled over to the other side. I think she definitely considers herself an outsider artist these days.
Well, and in Rare Visions, we've tended to stay to the outsider artists and the untrained, but it is our show, and once in a while we've crossed paths with somebody we loved regardless, and so we just put them in anyway. And we like that we'll look at each other and say, Randy and I will say, well, it's our show. We can do what we want. So
I noticed there's a guy in Warrensburg who was trained in art school, but the work he was making, salvaging things from the trash and so forth.
Right, and he's still down there, I think. I passed by there on the Highway 50, and I still see his site. I haven't stopped to say hello, but
it's not the materials, because in San Francisco at the city dump, they actually have an artist residency, and people can apply for a residency there and build sculpture from whatever they pull out of the dump. But those people apply, and most of them have gone through art schools. So it's not the materials. It's just, for us, it was a loose definition. It just meant you hadn't been trained. It was self-taught.
Let's talk to Roger in Midtown.
Well, I guess, have you guys been to the Putnam Museum there in Devonport during the Beaux-Arts Fair?
We have not. I know what you're talking about, but pretty good site?
It's a great site. It's on the hill. It's overlooking the Mississippi. They usually have a very good turnout of Midwestern exhibitors, and it's just a great time had by all. So if you can make it up there. I definitely recommend it. And then Rag Bribe, when you do a Rag Bribe, stop at every little town, go on east or west, and most of them have got some sort of small county art association, and that's always fun to do. So.
Yep. You know, Roger's just given us some suggestions on, you know, if people want to basically replicate what you do, get on the road and just find some stuff that looks cool. What are your suggestions for people who want to follow in your footsteps?
Get off the interstates and get on the back highways and stop in little towns. And if something catches your eye, by all means, pull the car over.
That's where the good stuff is.
That's where the good stuff is. And that's where you meet people. And people are friendly. The world is full of friendly people. So. That's my advice. And if you're heading out, you can, it's a shameless plug, but the rarevisionsroadtrip.com website, you can check on any state in the nation and see all kinds of sites that you might want to stop at and get hours and all that kind of stuff. So
same for Kelly's website, too. She's got artists A through Z. You can click on, and read about all these people. And there's a lot of information. And there's a lot of collectors. A guy from Houston, Texas came up for the opening night. His name was Narrow Larry. I'll never forget meeting Narrow Larry, and he's got a great website about environments.
And so do you really do your research the old-fashioned way? You know, you really just get in the car and eyeball it.
Well, some of that, and some of it we know of because people will send us stuff. And I should say at this point that I'm not doing as much of the research as I once was. Randy seems to be doing more of it, and so I have to give credit where credit's due. But
you can tell from the callers, there's a lot of people that know about these places.
Yeah, it's just that, something catches your eye on the highway or on the road, you need to stop and pull over. That's the time to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have come to the end of our show.
Stop and pull over.
We're going to pull over, Walt. We've been joined today by Mike Murphy of the public television show Rare Visions and Roadside Revelations, as well as Mo Dickens of the Belger Arts Center. Thanks so much for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. It was great to meet the famous Walt Bodine.
Mercy.
Rare Visions Detour Art is on display at the Belger Arts Center, which is at 21st and Walnut until May 1st. You can find more information about all of our guests at kcur.org/Walt Bodine.
That's right, May.
Tomorrow, our movie critics will be here to review the latest films, including I Love You Man, starring Kansas City native Paul Rudd. Although it's time for us to sign off for today, you can visit us online anytime at kcur.org/Walt Bodine. You can also listen to previous episodes using the Walt Bodine Audio Archives. We had help today from KCUR's Kim Noble and intern Jamie Medlicott. Suzanne Hogan is our producer. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Walt, that's it for today.
And all we can say is, don't even think about going away. Stick around for Up to Date, which comes next.